The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we're giving you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. Guess what? Our free summit help night on Zoom is coming up again next Wednesday. It's a thing that we do once a month. It's a service of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. It's a free meeting, and you don't have to worry about like there being a boring lecture, because every month's help night has a particular topic, and it's literally just we gather together a group of people who know how to do something, and then you call and you ask questions and present deals to be evaluated and all of those fun sorts of things. It's from 7:30 to 9 p.m. next Wednesday. That is the 28th of August, and you can get your link to join in on the discussion at CincinnatiREIA.com. That is CincinnatiREIA.com. Just go to the calendar, click on that link, put your name in, and you'll be sent a link to join on Zoom. And next week's topic, help night topic, is help raising private money, which is a good segue into today's program here on Real Life Real Estate Investing, because I'm talking today to John Burley, who is one of the most successful private money raisers in the real estate business. He's got over 40 years of investing experience, and he has built an entire business, a real estate business, just like you want to have, around the idea of money first, raise the private money, and then everything else gets super easy from there. So we're going to talk to him today about his business model and about how to go about the process of starting to raise private money, and also take your questions at 877-772-9658, or of course via email at vinaradio, that's V-E-N-A radio, at gmail.com. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vina. It's wonderful to be here. I'm super, super excited. And as you know, boy, I've been working with you folks there in Ohio for almost 25 years now. So it's really exciting to be talking with you today and to be coming back for your big summit in November.
Yeah, one of the things I really like about this time of year is because the summit's coming up, it's really easy for me to get people like you, who are huge experts and who I don't get to talk to all that often, to come on the show so that like I can find out what's going on with you these days, what the latest thing is about your particular business. And of course, we can also fill in some blanks for listeners who always a demand for more information about private money. How do I do this? How do I do this? So why don't we start with like just your story? How did you get from high school to where you are today?
Absolutely. I think, you know, like a lot of people that are listening right now, and certainly, you know, you growing up and me growing up, I had an interest in real estate. It was something I thought I should do. I actually went, Bill Nickerson, probably the first creative real estate book ever written was by Nickerson, as you know. And I took his event. I was actually 17 the first time, back in 1978.
Mm.
And, you know, when I went to that first event, then some of the other bigger names from that era afterwards, just like, the best way to describe it is I drank Kool-Aid. And I think a lot of people are nodding their head right now and getting it. The challenge for me was I didn't realize they were serving green Kool-Aid, which we all know doesn't taste very good. I wanted the red Kool-Aid, and I got the green. And it was all about, it's kind of like I've been hearing this for 45 years or whatever it is now. It's like, you know, no money down, no credit, get rich quick, super easy, anybody can do it. And if you're a veteran, you're just kind of chuckling right now because you know that isn't the truth and that isn't how it works. And so, you know, I went in to own my own business. I owned a couple businesses. I then settled into the brokerage business from the world of Wall Street, built a very, very successful practice, and was doing the real estate on the side. It was kind of funny, Bina. I'm doing green Kool-Aid, no money down deals, which are great and exciting and wonderful, but they're not the easiest to find, while I'm running real red Kool-Aid brokerage business in the world of Wall Street. And it was like, you know, and I talked to some of my very successful clients about, you know, what I was doing. They're kind of like, well, yeah, sure you could, kid, but why would you? I mean, you can buy stocks without money, but why would you? Why wouldn't you just go get the money? That's what you do. That's what real businesses do. And so kind of I had the epiphany. I sold the brokerage in 1989. I formed my private equity company. We were the first company in America to go out and do large single-family portfolios. We're the 2% of private equity companies that we work for a profit, not for fees. So we make our money off of the earnings, not off of just management fees like most companies. So obviously our clients do better and we do better. And what really changed is like, look, when I look at the models for real businesses out there, and real estate to real business, I think some of us need to really make that connection for ourselves. It's a real business. If you've got one house, you have a real business. And for many of us, you know, you need to do what I had to do. I need to mature my businesses, and I need to get a little bit better at it. So you look at businesses, it's like, you know, first one is, you know, there's four keys. First key is have a great idea. We're all in a good spot because real estate's a great idea, always has been and always will be if done properly. You know, the second thing is what real businesses do. If you go to an MBA program, you know, the second thing they teach you after the great idea is you go raise the money. They don't say to try and do it without money. They say to raise the money. And then the next thing is you have to have a system to monetize, which is getting paid up front, which was one of my challenges with real estate. You know, I'd worked really hard and put everything together, and I needed a lot of things to happen just so, and God forbid the market not go down, for me to get paid rather than just getting paid up front like a real business. And then the fourth step is to learn how to run it like an actual business.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than doing what most guys and gals do and you know, just fighting it, I acknowledged full on that real estate was tight. It was no different than all the other asset classes I'd worked with in Wall Street. It was nothing but money. It was always about money. It would always be about money, and stop pretending otherwise. I grew up a lot. And so then what I started doing was just raising. For the students, it's great because part of the RAISE model is we teach you how to raise, answer any questions you have today, any questions Bina has. And then every deal we do, we get a $10,000 placement fee up front, which takes care of the short-term needs to pay bills, eat, survive, grow the business while building cash flow. I think the other thing I did that was really unique, as you know, Bina, literally like of all the thousands and thousands of transactions I've done, we've raised almost $1 billion, just about to go over $1 billion in raises, and then obviously a lot of people leveraged, is we always were only about cash flow. I just wanted long-term income streams. The placement fee gave me the eating money, and I just wanted to build a huge portfolio with large income streams. And obviously it far surpassed any of those high school goals I had. And so that's what we do. And we teach people very part-time, because I still am the CEO and I run the private equity company. But a few times a year, like we're doing with you guys in Ohio, we come out and we share very transparent, just verbatim what we're doing. And it's not ancient history. It's literally what we're doing right now. I mean, I'm literally going over deals earlier today that we're doing.
Nice. So we're going to unpack all of that. But we have to take a quick break. The number to call for the, I guess it is numbers. There's 10 numbers here. The number to call if you have questions about raising private money or John's model is 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. You can also send that question via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. My guest today is John Burley, who is a very successful private money raiser. He's in the real estate business. He has just told me that the information in his bio is now outdated and that he's close to $1 billion in money raised, because I still had the number 600 million stuck in my head, because it's been a long time since we talked, John.
Too long, my friend. And seriously, for those of you guys who are listening, I don't know if you know what a gem you have. I have more respect and admiration for Vina than almost anybody in the history of the business. You are amazing. And you ever need a guest, just call me, Vina. I'll make it work.
Okay. People can't see on radio that I'm like blushing now. So I'm just going to tell them.
Well, good. I can see it.
Blushing now. So I think for our real estate listeners, I mean, most of the folks who listen to the show are like, I just want to buy houses. It might help to start with what your real estate model is before we get into the important thing, which is how you fund it. So can you talk about, like, what kind of properties does your company like to acquire, and where, and what price ranges, and all of those sorts of things, so that the folks who are doing the same thing you're doing but on a way smaller scale can go, oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah, absolutely. So our corporate headquarters are in Phoenix, Arizona. I grew up in far northern California, just a little teeny town, which is a great place to grow up. And so what we're here in Phoenix, we also invest in 11 other states, so 12 states and a couple countries. And what we do is literally I buy what I call lunch pail Joe homes, but I buy them differently, in that I buy them with the end result being that the resident living in the property will become owners. So I don't do traditional renting. I have, which is why I don't. It's been a lot of years. We have thousands and thousands of families just from my company that have moved into a home as a resident, made the payments for a number of years, then owned the home free and clear and got the deed. Internationally, and throughout America, our students have over 1 million families who end up owning a home, who most of whom wouldn't have owned a home otherwise. So the first thing is the resident living in the home needs to be the big winner, which is a total shift from normal real estate. To do that, I need to have the right type of family in the right type of neighborhood, so we don't do anything Class C. I just don't like Class C neighbors. I don't want to live in them. I don't want to go to them. I know on paper they make a bunch of money. For those that do them actively, they know they're a lot of work, and they may make more money on paper, but not in the bank. Class A is just too nice, and the families in Class A neighborhoods don't need my assistance with financing, owner financing on their end. And they can get to the dream of homeownership that most middle class are locked out of. So we do Class B, nice houses, probably nicer than most seminar people teach, but that's what we do. I don't like adversarial relationships. I don't like properties falling apart. We do good, solid homes in good neighborhoods. Depending where I'm at, you know, they're 20 to 100 years old, depending what part of the country I'm in. But good, solid, middle class, lunch pail Joe, blue collar, you know, whatever you want to say it. A couple years ago, all politicians would call them decent, God-fearing Americans, but we're not supposed to say things like that anymore. Oops, I just did. So just regular houses for regular people. I then buy the houses. I don't go – there's no city in America where I want to own the city, but there's lots of places where I'd like to own specific houses in good neighborhoods. And so I buy those houses. The number, the price is actually one of the least important factors. It's one thing about money is there's different components, and there's four components into, you know, the debt servicing and the monthly payment on a piece of real estate. Price is just one of them. If I can get a better interest rate, if I can get a higher monthly, then I'm not so much worried about the price. And since we do long-term deals versus short-term, I have less pressure on me to get a deal of a lifetime, which is kind of hard to do on every deal I do. So I can literally go in and pay close to a retail price. Now, I prefer to pay less, and most of my deals are good and underneath retail, but I can literally buy for retail in most regular blue-collar neighborhoods, regardless of the price, and then put a family in with them owning the home, following all the codes and the rules that have to be followed that I know a lot of people act like they don't count, but, you know, all those rules apply. And we follow all of them. I'm from the Wall Street background, so we dot our I's and cross our T's, because where I come from, when you play loosey-goosey with the rules, you go to jail. You don't hope to not get caught. And so we run a real clean shop, regular houses, regular people, and the end result was they own. And then the next step is the private investor, our capital investors. And they put up the capital, they sign for, and sign the logs if we're doing leverage. Some do and some don't. Whatever we want to do is fine. We receive a placement fee of $10,000 per door. So, Dean, if you came on and did five houses, I'd make 10,000 times five upfront money. And that's just the cost of doing business and leaves me some money to have money. And then from there, we do all the work. We split everything down the middle, good and bad, all costs to the penny, no buffers, no management fees, none of that stuff that nobody wants. So it's clear, concise for the capital investor. We're found the company in 89. We've never had a losing year. And quite frankly, the best years we ever had were 8 to 12 when most everybody else went broke. You and I both knew a lot of good people who shouldn't, but did. And we do that. And it's kind of like I was blessed. I was good friends with Zig Ziglar. And, you know, there's hundreds of Zigisms, as they call them. But the favorite I always had was, if you help enough other people get what they want, you'll get everything you want. Well, the reality is the American dream is to own your own home. About 65% of the country doesn't. 35% are left. Of those 35%, about 75% want to own. So about 25% of the country wants to own a home. And all the banks and the lenders and the government gives a whole bunch of lip service to home ownership. All they do is continually pass legislation and rules that make it harder to own. And so we just step in and provide that home ownership, provide that American dream, provide a great return for our capital investors, and then there's a whole bunch left over for us and our company.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we're already getting questions coming in from listeners here, and so we'll deal with this real estate part for a little while longer. But I know that what a lot of people want to get to is, wait, how did you raise $1 billion in private money? So, question from Kevin: when you said that you finance the properties to your buyers, but you also said lease option, is it really a lease option, or is it a land contract, or something similar to that?
We do both. Most of our residents are now doing a lease with a 10-year option with a fully locked-in price that's transparent and everybody can see from day one with no funny business or complicated formulas. A large percentage of our residents cannot qualify under Dodd-Frank for a land contract or installment contract. There's a lot of people out there that think that there's different rules. There's not. If you do more than one in 365 days, claw forward and claw back, you have to do full Dodd-Frank compliance. And no amount of entities or trusts or anything else you do change those rules. It's actually kind of interesting timing, because in the last month there's been a whole bunch of stuff that's come up from some court rulings where they've really put some people to the wall for violations. So we are full compliance people. For those that can fully qualify under the Dodd-Frank lending rules, we will do the 30-year fully amortizing, what you guys call a land contract.
Contract for deed, for those of you who are from other parts of the country.
Yeah, we're in agreement for sale in Arizona. And what I always just tell people is, you know, use docs like ours and just call it whatever your state calls it, because each state has their own little verbiage for it. I think land contract is the most common name. Contract for deed probably is the best definition name. And it's just, you know, a way of doing it. We love doing it. Our business actually entirely did 30-year installment contracts, the land contracts, up until July of 13, because at that point we were 6 months from Dodd-Frank going live, so we made the shift just aware that 75-80% of our clients could not qualify under Dodd-Frank. And there's no common sense measuring stick. It's the government rules and regs. It doesn't matter that you're currently paying $2,000 a month and my house would be $15 a month. That's irrelevant. You have to follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we just dot the I's, cross the T's. We do the one that's more appropriate for them, and provide them with ownership and owner finance.
Okay. So second question that came in is from Jonathan, and it has to do with sourcing your deals, because you're buying stuff on a much bigger scale than most real estate investors, but I gather you're also kind of doing it one property at a time. So he says, are you generating leads yourself? Do you have people do it for you? What are you experiencing in the current market in terms of finding deals and how you're doing it?
Hey, Jonathan, thanks for the call, buddy. Hey, yes, yes, and yes. So we do everything. So a couple things where we have a very different distinction, and maybe the best image for everybody to have right now, if you're driving, don't close your eyes. If you're not driving, you can close your eyes. Yeah, look, if you went to the next event, and at the next event you went to, or this show today, you got the information you needed, and you raised $1 million, and you had $1 million in the bank for real, not pretend, actual money. could you go buy real estate right now where you live? And I think for everybody, the answer is like, well, yeah, if I had $1 million, real estate wouldn't be that hard. There you go. See, what we do is we do it how it was supposed to be done, how real businesses do it. Real estate investors, most of us were taught to put the cart before the horse, to go try and find a deal without money. Well, first of all, the high-end professionals that have access to lots of deals aren't going to work with you because you can't perform. That's just the truth. So you're not getting into any of those big, deep things where you can buy lots and lots of properties for lots of money, cash, with very quick closing. That's not occurring. They're not waiting for your hard money loan. They're not doing any of the assignment stuff. None of that happens in the big real world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we raise money first, so we always have the money. And then where do we buy? Right now, today, about 25 to 30% of what we're doing is subject to. Taking over existing loans, you got to dot your I's, you got to cross the T's. Different states have different rules for it. I live in a state, for example, where the land trust is almost entirely abolished. Title companies won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, and we have a full disclosure state, so we don't use them, obviously. Other states, good to go, run with them all day long. So we're doing about 25-30% is sub two, mainly off market from marketing that we do ourselves. That's predominantly postcards. And fluorescent paper signs, not the corrugated plastic yellow sign. I was the first guy to do those starting in 90. And by 2003, those have turned into just, they all say the same thing. Low light rip off, scum bucket real estate investors. So don't use the yellow corrugated plastic sign with a black lettering anymore. That's so dead. And then some from wholesalers, but wholesalers have a hard time understanding why price isn't important, but payments are. See, I'm more worried about the income stream than the price. The next thing we do buy a lot of singles, onesies, twosies, from MLS and off-market and wholesalers. We also do portfolio transactions. I have not had a good portfolio buy in almost 2 years where someone had a portfolio that was properly priced. Those have been, because of the fees, massive fees generated by Wall Street, those have turned into you actually pay premiums for existing portfolios rather than non-premiums. And most portfolios that I would take over, I have to move out 75 to 85% of the existing residents over the first year. Because they're not the residents we would have ever put in a home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So one more quick question before we take a break, because it is going to inform the next set of questions that I ask you. Are you typically buying these in some form of distress and then fixing them up, or are you trying to buy stuff that's, like, ready to go right now?
Both. With that said, since about 16, 18, by 18 for sure, almost everything we buy has been fully renovated by an investor who's, in most cases, over-renovated and had it held too long and is just walking out. We do buy distress in the more traditional sector that's out there, you know, the beat up, et cetera, it's just that's less and less what's there. And a lot of markets I work in, Phoenix in particular, you know, the old days, Vina, they were simpler times. So, you know, it was a $100,000 house. It needed 20,000 repairs. They put it on the MLS for 75 grand. Mm-hmm. Today, it's a $300,000 house. It needs $80,000 repairs, and they put it on the MLS for 295 and it sells.
Mm-hmm.
People are actually paying overpriced for the privilege of fixing up. And so if I can get it without fixing up and make more money, I don't care. I just do it that way.
Okay. Awesome. So when we come back from this next break, we're going to walk through what an individual house purchase looks like for you in terms of where is the money coming from and when is it coming from and when does the investor start getting returns. And then we will get into the big question of how do you find these people? You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Guest today is John Burley. Our number's in the studio if you have questions. Don't wait for me to ask your question. I probably won't ask your question, and this show is all about making sure you get the information you need. 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to John Burley about his money first system, where he knows he's got the money to go buy a house and then he just goes and finds the house he likes, or and actually thousands and thousands of different houses that he has liked over the years. And again, if you have questions about what's going on here, 877-772-9658 or vinoradio@gmail.com. And don't get intimidated by the fact that John talks so fast. Don't be all, oh man, this guy knows so much and I'm a newbie and I don't want to ask him questions, because of course he was a newbie once too, and he's dealt with thousands of new investors over the years, as an instructor. And, yeah, don't be scared. Call or send in an email. So, John, still getting into the money part now, but just trying to make folks understand how all of this flows. Your acquisitions folks find a house, you do your analysis, you make an offer, it's under contract, we're going to closing. Where is the money coming from to close? Is it coming directly from one of your investors, or do you actually have a fund set up that's got money pooled?
I've done it both ways. The vast majority of my students and the vast majority of my deals have actually been what's called a joint venture agreement. We form an LLC, a limited liability company. In most cases, some foreign nationals will use a different device, but basically a limited liability company. In this example, Uvina would come in as the capital investor. I'm the managing investor. We would open up a bank account. You would wire funds to that bank account, and that would be the commitment that you're going in. If you're paying cash, we pay a 4% preferred rate plus half the profits and all the tax benefits and all the good things that go with it. I know when you're new, you think you need to do a gazillion rate of return. Let me tell you right now, you're presenting for money and you're saying anything above 10% cash flow, people who have money think you're lying to take their money. It's too high. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you provide 10, 12, 15, 20%, you just don't talk about presenting and having that kind of money. So they get a 4% preferred rate plus half of everything good and bad for the entire duration of the investment. And that's a preferred rate investor, 4% plus that. And a good chunk of investors just pay cash. Not my early investors, but my more affluent investors, obviously, as I grew up in the business and got better at what I did.
Okay, John, going to have to stop you for a minute because the jargon flag just got thrown in here. Explain preferred return.
Yeah, so preferred return, very important. The documents are very, very clearly written so that if you use it as they're intended and how you're taught, you are not operating a security. And we've been through those investigations, jurisdictions, et cetera, by many, many students. So it's not a security, even with the 10,000 placement fee, but the very specific rules you have to do, and you have to dot your I's and cross the T's. Preferred rate is if you put up, make the example easy, not many of us are doing $100,000 houses more, but if you put, you're going to put up $100,000 for the deal, you get a 4% preferred rate paid every time the house is in performance, and we pay monthly. Some people, students pay quarterly, we pay monthly. And then all the profits that are generated every month, which is what we're working on, you get 50% of those profits plus 4% preferred rate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's just, I just want to make sure that folks who are listening are making a distinction in their mind here. This is not a loan against real estate. It is not a mortgage with a 4% rate, or even a performance mortgage with a 4% rate plus 50% of the income. It is a co-ownership agreement.
Correct.
We formed a new company. I can't imagine how many LLCs you must have out there in the world. We have formed a new LLC. In your scenario, Vina has funded it up front before maybe we have even identified a property that we want to buy.
We've
talked through Vina's comfortable in Kansas City. Vina's got $150,000 to invest. Now, John, you get to take it from here. I'm not going to get in your life and say, no, don't buy the blue house, buy the pink house.
Yeah, because I'm not even going to ask you whether you want the blue or pink one, because you hired me for the expertise. That's what I'm bringing. And it's just, I learned, so a lot of my capital investors don't want the money pooled. I don't like the money pooled. Usually it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, but there's so much truth to it. If you want to do syndications and stuff like that, you know, and make your 15% or 20% managing fee. You're doing that because you suck at what you do and you don't make great returns. If you made great returns, you'd want half the profits and be willing to share half the losses. So I always tell people, look, if you make great returns, move off the syndication type thing and get richly rewarded for what you're providing for people. If you don't make great returns and you're not going to, which is a lot of operators, and I'm not actually even judging that, it just is. 98% run for fees, not profits. Only 2% of us run for profits. If you're running for fees, then by all means, don't do something where the emphasis is on trying to get a great return. It's not what you're trying to do, and you can't do both. You can't serve those two masters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the first one, preferred rate, they want to pay cash. They don't want to get a loan. A lot of people when they're older don't want to leverage anymore. And we can go back and forth. You and I have had some of these conversations. We could have it in the front of the room. We could do a whole day on to leverage or not to leverage. At the end of the day, it's whatever the capital investor wants to do is good. There's pros and cons to both.
Mm-hmm.
As they get older and wealthier, they deleverage a bunch. That's kind of the end game thing that social media forgets about. There has to be an end game where you don't have all the debt, but you still have a bunch of assets.
Amen.
And then, you know, when I was new, most of my capital investors put down the 20 or 25% down or the 15% down, depending on the local bank. And today we're back to community banks like the old days, not the national banks. Because they can do the non-conforming loans, so we can have way more than four loans. And we just take out a regular loan. They put a 20 or 25% down payment. That's their capital contribution. When it's cashed out, they get their money back before we split. And then we split the returns and the losses 50-50. And again, with 35 years, I'm not even looking for wood to knock on. We're at 35 years. We make money every year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the disadvantage is obviously, unlike a Wall Street, more traditional Wall Street fund guy or gal, I can't just go buy everything and overpay for everything and just come into a market and buy a bunch of stuff that doesn't make much money because I have to take care of it for the next decade. And so we only buy properties that make a lot of money. So when markets get really high and overpriced, we scale down. When markets are lower priced and there's more opportunities, we scale up. Mm-hmm. That would be the one big drawback to mine. It doesn't work always, all the time, at a high volume. Always at a low volume, because, you know, I don't need to tell you, I mean, there's always deals out there. It's just how hard you want to work for them.
What is low volume? What is a low volume year in John Burley world?
Oh, 10, 20 a month.
Yeah, I think most people who are listening would consider high volume 10 or 20 a year.
I think what people like, you know, what my students tell me, and we just went over officially, there's many I don't know about, but we actually have over 1,000 students or Century Club members now who have literally done over 100 deals in portfolio cash flowing, over 1,000 of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of weird because I do 3 or 4 events a year and other companies are doing 3 or 4 a weekend. and we literally have more high end successes than any other company that ever did it.
The interesting thing that I think is going to hang folks up who have been learning about the more traditional, when you hear private money, most people think, okay, so I find somebody who's willing to lend me money and then I go find a deal and then I call them up and I get a loan against the property, which by the way, I have to make a payment on every month, even during that period of time when I am getting the house fixed up and rented, and
yeah.
It's always a fixed rate. And I just want to make sure these folks who are listening are hearing loud and clear that this is private money, but it's not a loan, which kind of puts it in a different category. You're co-owners. Now, someone's going to send this question in the next 20 seconds, I promise you. They're going to say, but isn't it better to get a private loan? Because then you own 100% of the property. You don't have a partner. What do you say to that?
Awesome. Awesome questions. I say, yeah, absolutely, unless something goes wrong. And I live in the real world. In the real world, stuff goes wrong all the time. One of the big things, I learned a lot of great things in Wall Street. Look, there's good and bad things in Wall Street. There's good operators and bad operators, like every single business. And most of them, literally, it's just fee-based. People go like, well, the Wolf of Wall Street, was it really that bad? And it's like, are you kidding? They toned it way down for the movie. You know, those were vicious criminals who were stealing everybody's money they could. These weren't good salespeople. They were criminals. If you couldn't sell with that lie, you know, it's just how you learn to reconcile with yourself that you are a very bad human being, which is a small percentage of every industry. You know, what I looked at this is that, look, I wanted Wall Street. One of the things they do great is they take risk and they hand it over, because they know that it's better to give away a piece of the pie to not put the whole thing at risk. You know, and people go, well, why wouldn't you want all your debt? Well, you got to remember, I've been doing this a long time. Here in Phoenix, there was 10, 12 of us that on the low end had 500 and several thousand houses. This is before the funds came in. And all of them but myself went under. It was a combination of reasons. First of all, a lot of them in 5 or 6, this was before Instagram, but they were living the Instagram life before that. You know, in 5 or 6, based on an anomaly in a year where they made 3 to 5 times more than they'd ever made in a year in a whole life, an anomaly, they redid their lifestyle. So it was non-sustainable. And then the other thing they did, they followed the advice of Seminar Land and they refinanced everything. And when the market hit the fan, they lost it all.
Refinanced it in some cases every year.
Yeah.
People were treating their houses like ATM machines.
Ask me how many investment properties I've refinanced in my entire career.
I'm guessing the number is approaching zero.
Three large commercial buildings that were extremely long holds that were bought with bad loans that were always going to be refinanced. I never refinanced a single family home. My wife refinanced 3 to buy more because it was very important to her. She came from a very lower class economic background, really good people, but lower class economically. And so she had her own property that she had bought with her own money, and it was very important to her to have that portfolio, which was her own, and I agreed. And she had wanted to leverage some of them, and she leveraged some of them, but I never did. She's like, you're going to do it? And I go, no, you can't. And it makes sense, but I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you got way more than me. Yeah, and I ain't doing it.
And I will just say.
It's not what the wealthy do with their businesses and their assets. Leave Real Estate Seminar Land and go to the real business world. Real business world, when times are good, they are not refinancing their assets. Microsoft is not taking on more debt. During good times, they do the opposite. They pay off the bad debt and they build up a war chest to pounce when the market corrects.
And I will just, for all those folks who are concerned about, you know, I'm only going to own half a house when I'm done. Let me say, I came from a background of you don't have partners. You know, you own your own real estate and you borrow money if you need money. And it took 2009 happening and all of those opportunities to buy stuff for nothing, to, you know, just get, banks were almost giving away properties there for a while, to realize that I would rather have half a deal and be able to do 20 of them than have a whole deal and be able to do 5 of them. Like, I put that on a spreadsheet and it just worked better.
And it does. And the thing is, look, we maintain absolute 100% control. There's no question about this. It's in the documents. It's in everything. We are completely in control. I'd simply rather own half of a huge portfolio than 100% of a very small portfolio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In our actual portfolio, which is normal for the 2% for-profit private equity companies, about 70% of the portfolio, give or take a percent, depending on the given month, is owned by me, and 30% is owned by capital investors. And that was simply because I do with my money what I do with other people's money. Most of my money, even though I come from a brokerage, you know, and that type of investment background, most of my money is reinvested into real estate. So I own about 70% of the private equity assets.
Mm-hmm. John, we need to take one last break, and then when we come back, we need to answer some listener questions. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. If you want to try and slide in a question before the end of the show today, you can go ahead and send it to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is John Burley, who is also one of the featured speakers at the 2024 National Real Estate Summit here in Cincinnati on October 31st through November 3rd. If you're a regular listener of Real Life Real Estate, you are aware that the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association that sponsors the national conference donated 30 seats to the station back in June to help, you know, raise money for the public radio station. And last time I checked, we had 9 of those seats available. You might want to go ahead and pledge for your seat instead of buying it at oreaconvention.com, and here's why. For $197, you get a seat like everybody else at the live event, but you also get VIP status, which if you went to the other place would cost you an extra $100. And you also get a free course on how to negotiate with sellers that, I mean, it's free to you. I sell it all the time for $297. So it is quite a package to lure you into giving some money to WMKV. You can do that right now by going to WMKVFM.org and scrolling to the bottom of the page where you'll see a big thing that says Pledge for the OREA Summit. They will take your credit card, they'll send it over to us, we'll get you a confirmation letter, and we will see you at the summit. John, as I had guessed, listeners have a lot of questions, and some of them are better than mine, so we're going to go ahead and tackle some of those questions. This question is from Jeff in Lima, Ohio. He says, can John say more about the $10,000 placement fee? Does that come to him at closing? And what does he tell his investors about what that is for?
Great question. And by the way, that's a super generous offer for the summit. My daughter on November 3rd is running the New York Marathon, so I'm going to be flying out on the red eye. But I will be there on the 31st, 1st, or 2nd. I'll have a name badge on, be sitting like everybody else. If you see me there, for gosh sakes, come up and ask questions. I'm totally, totally available the whole time I'm there, and I'll have a couple senior members of my team with me.
Excellent.
The $10,000 placement fee, this is one of the great things that Wall Street did. Wall Street doesn't do anything for free ever. Not once. Never. And, you know, so if you actually buy, if you ever bought stock or a mutual fund or whatever it was, there was an asset management fee or there was a commission or a fee, whatever they called it. They take that out before they do the investment. So if you want to buy 100 shares of Apple, they take their commission out before your shares are bought. The moment that money hits the account, the LLC that's going to be used for the investment, or you can do it directly to your management, but most of us do it directly to the different LLCs. The moment it hits the account, whatever the commitment is, 3 houses, 5 houses, whatever, that is your money. Legally, ethically, and morally, take it out and do what you do. The days of sitting around and waiting and hoping it all works out at the end and they'll throw you crumbs are over if you choose them to be over. That's mm-hmm. your choice.
Mm-hmm.
I did those games and those rules, and I never would again. And we earn what we do. So in today's world, a $300,000 house over a decade returns over $350,000 into the bank. To be split by the two parties with their $300,000 going back to them.
Mm-hmm.
I know what we make and I know what we do and I know the value we provide and the track record of our own company and all of our students who have done so amazingly well. The $10,000 placement fee is paid up front. The money's yours to do with as you would. You earned it. You deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I what I have is $150,000 to invest, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you $150,000 and then we're going to buy $140,000 with the money. Because the first in goes to you. Okay. Got it. And hey,
yeah,
I'm not begrudging you that. I know what it takes to do marketing, to have acquisitions people on the ground, to make there's actual money involved in finding the properties as well.
The only name I would disclose that people would know is just because they used to brag about the stage all the time, but there is many, many high-end investors and speakers, the Kiyosaki's, Rich Dad being one of them, where they just gave their money to someone like me to play because they're too busy doing their business to do real estate. Real estate's a real work, guys. This is not like a podcast. This is real work.
It truly is.
It's really, really high if you know what you're doing. And there's a learning curve, and you got to invest your time in education.
Okay, question from Michael, who does not say where he is from. How am I ever going to raise any money if I don't have a long track record of real estate investing?
Hi, Michael. Great question. So here's the thing that we do as human beings, and I'm no different than you, because the one thing all of us right now listening at this moment have in common. At one time, we were new, and we'd never, ever done a deal, not one. which puts us in company with people like Warren Buffett, who at one time had never done a deal. See, everybody had never done it until they've done it. So this is where not everybody can do it. See, this is the hard part. The hard part isn't rolling up your sleeves and working it. The hard part is going like, wow, just because I haven't done it doesn't mean I can't do it. And just because I haven't done it wouldn't mean someone wouldn't trust me. What I'm saying is I don't trust myself probably. Mm-hmm. And so the story is what we got to work on. We all have this story. Our stories are real, but they're not true. And we come up with reasons why we can or why we can't do something. So look, none of us had a track record when we started. I have over 1,000 students who have over 100 properties in portfolios. That would mean on the low end, 25, 30,000 a month. Many of them make over 100,000 a month net after cost that they pay income taxes on. Because unlike social media, rich people pay taxes.
So
what we work on is we work on slowly, step by step, raising our own story and opinion of ourselves. So nobody had ever done a deal with a partner until they did a deal with a partner. You know, and so what we need to do is we just need to move forward with a plan. Then we understand what people are investing in. People aren't investing in your track record. They're not investing for rate of return. They're not investing for what most people believe they invest for. Most people in America who are wealthy today were catastrophically, psychologically, emotionally harmed so bad by January of 10, and they had lost over a third of everything they had in the Great Recession, which, let me help you out, it was a full-blown depression. It was the last one we'd had since 1932. Mm-hmm. What they want is they want safety and or security as their primary need and objective, and no one else is teaching it. And I teach it verbatim, word for word, how we do it, what we say, and why.
Mm-hmm. John, unfortunately, we are out of time, and I've still got two or three questions in the inbox, but Mike's given me the wrap it up signal. So I'm just going to have to tell folks, especially our last questioner, one of your big jobs as a new investor is to make sure you can do your part of this deal, which means getting good at recognizing deals, managing them on the back end, all of that sort of stuff, because it's your education that folks are relying on when you are new. And you can get some of that by coming to the National Real Estate Summit. Go to wmkvfm.org, scroll down to the bottom, grab your seat with the special deal for Real Life Real Estate listeners. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.